Welcome, everyone, to episode 207 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about a lot of dysfunction. We're not going to talk about the Pelicans for a change, but we will hit on the Lakers, the Celtics, and the Suns. And we're also going to talk about some good players on bad teams who deserve a little more love. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, again, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. Mort, how's it going? How are you feeling?
I'm still very much sick, but I'm feeling better to the extent that I can record at least. So, progress.
Yes.
Like in your country, progress.
We are happy to have you back, of course. I was going to say Josh did so well that we've actually replaced you and he's the new full-time host, but I won't troll you too hard today, I promise.
I appreciate it because I have so much mucus in my head, I wouldn't get half the jokes you threw at me today. So, but no, I actually listened to the podcast, loved having Josh on. I'm very sad that I couldn't be on at the same time because I actually wanted to be on the first time we had Josh on and I wasn't. So next time, very much looking forward to it.
Definitely. And hopefully we won't have to talk about Zion getting hurt next time too. Prayers up.
That is very true. Let's hope we never have to talk about that.
Yeah, for real. All right, Mort. So we know we've talked a lot about the Lakers and the Celtics, and frankly the Pelicans too, but really those are three of the biggest stories in the NBA, and you just have to continue to address them. So we're not going to spend the entire episode on this, but we do want to start with the Lakers. We're not going to hit the Pelicans. Nothing has changed. The whole situation is still a farce. I mean, that's... nothing's going to change between now and the end of the season unless they decide to bench him. So that is our final thought on the New Orleans Pelicans this year, in all likelihood. Let's turn, though, to the Lakers, their opponent on Wednesday night, who the Lakers got a big, very much needed win, in large part because the Pelicans only played Anthony Davis 20 minutes. You know, LeBron hits a big corner three at the end of the game to really seal things up. But prior to that game, they are coming off losing two against the same Pelicans team without it. Anthony Davis did not play at all that game. And then against the Grizzlies on Monday. After both of those games, LeBron took the bus and just ran his teammates all over it. You know, after the Pelicans loss, he was just saying, like, you got to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. It kind of looks like we're sometimes afraid to be uncomfortable and get out of our comfort zone, which was just clearly shaded some of his younger teammates, but that's no different than what Kyrie's doing with the Celtics.
Right.
After the Grizzlies loss, he was a little more direct because, you know, there was this whole conversation about, well, you know, you just tried to trade half of the team for Anthony Davis a couple weeks ago. They might be distracted by that. Like, is there any lingering effect? And he said, at this point, if you're still allowing distractions to affect the way you play, then this is the wrong franchise to be a part of. And you should just come and be like, listen, I don't think this is for me. I can't do this. So that's a lot to unpack. But right now, they are currently three games back of the Clippers and Spurs. They have 21 games to play. They have the seventh hardest remaining schedule, according to Tankathon. Do you think they make it in? And do you think they have enough time to sort out the issues that have been plaguing them as of late?
I don't know. That's not even the most interesting part to me. It's really just LeBron driving all over his teammates. Yeah. Like, even if they make it to the playoffs, like, you have to wonder, how are these guys going to respond to LeBron in a playoff setting?
Right.
Like, are they going to have his back? Are they going to go out there and you know, disappoint him or you know, actually try to live up to his expectations? Like, there are just so many subplots going on here. I don't think they'll make it in, honestly, but I've been wrong before because it's LeBron. Yeah. So he might just will them the way in, you know. But this whole thing is such a mess. And I think it's so insulting of him going with the whole, then this is the wrong franchise.
Right.
Like, you're one of the newest Lakers. I mean, come on. I know that you're looking at it and comparing, like, in terms of historical aspect and whatnot, but a lot of these guys were here before. They're just not as talented as you are. Like, understand that. Like, Mike had the same issue, but he was in his 20s.
Right.
Like, I'm so weirded out by LeBron, you know, at age, what, 34?
Yeah.
Still not comprehending the fact that, hey, you know, I am worlds better than most other players that I share the court with.
Right.
Like, you can't just force them to become these all-stars, even though you want to.
Yeah.
I'm very weirded out by what he's trying to accomplish here.
Yeah, and, like, I love when he tries to empathize them around the trade deadline. He's like, you know, trying to relate as if he's ever been in a trade rumor before. Like, off, LeBron. You have no idea what these guys are going through. I agree. That part is hilarious. Look, I never want to count out LeBron James. Like, he's clearly... I mean, I think it is fair to say he is not 100% over that groin strain. Or at least I hope that's the case, because otherwise his half-hearted defensive effort is inexplicable. I mean, he hasn't tried that hard on defense during the regular season for a couple of years now, but this is
a couple.
I mean, it's got
half a decade, Brian.
Yeah. But, like, the clips going around Monday night from that Grizzlies game, especially toward the end of the game, were just egregious. I mean, he is not moving nearly as well as he was earlier this season, even. So I think it's fair to say he just doesn't have. I think he's got, like, the straight line agility back. But lateral, side to side, it doesn't seem like he has total confidence in his body. So I think we do have to give him some benefit of the doubt in that regard. That said, I mean, he's still LeBron James, so I don't want to totally count him out. They do have a really tough schedule. I think the next five or so games will go a long way toward determining how serious their playoff push is, because they're Friday home against Milwaukee. Saturday, a back-to-back against Phoenix, which, God, if they lose to Phoenix, I want to be on Twitter for that one. Then three-game homestand, Clippers, Nuggets, Celtics. The Lakers-Celtics is going to be interesting, because it's like whichever team loses that game is going to be in an existential crisis. Then the schedule softens up somewhat for the Lakers for the rest of that month. I mean, they have some tricky games, but they have a lot of winnable ones too. But their last five games of the season, at OKC, home against the Warriors, at the Clippers, home against the Jazz, home against the Blazers. Realistically, unless seeds are locked into place, at least some of those teams are going to have things to play for. So I think this thing comes down to the wire. If I had to pick today, I would say they would not make it in, but I know that's going to look dumb in a month.
Yeah, it could easily be. Like, we've all looked so dumb when we counted LeBron out, so I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this time around it's different, though. It's a new team, after all. Like, he was accustomed to being in Cleveland both the first and the second time around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Miami, the supporting staff was just so much better. And he was that much younger, so he was just more effective when he was on.
Mm-hmm.
I think this just could be the perfect storm this season for him not making it. I mean, look at the teammates as well. You know, and to be fair to LeBron, I get the criticism. It's not, I don't have a problem with the point that he's making. I'm having a problem with the way that he's presenting the point.
Right.
Because that is not a good team. That is not a great supporting cast. Mm-hmm. I get that. I mean, that's completely accurate, but, like, you can't do anything about it these days. So keep throwing them under the bus. I'm not sure what that accomplishes at all, but yeah. I mean, it's just an unfortunate situation right now, because you know, the Lakers were just all in on LeBron this summer, going, we're going to go back to the playoffs, we're going to make a push, we're going to be competitive, and then they might actually end up missing the playoffs. I don't think anyone saw that coming.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think, how much do you think Lonzo Ball's absence and eventual return could give them that extra boost they need?
Well, defensively, it could be a boost.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively is still the big question. He still hasn't broken out.
Yeah.
And I'm really not sure what he is offensively still. But his defensive presence is huge. And if he kind of makes up for some of LeBron's, I don't want to say lapses, but just decisions not to engage in the same caliber that he used to, then that's quite significant, because you do have a somewhat broad arsenal of offensive weapons in Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma. So theoretically, on paper, he should help significantly.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of like practicality, we have no idea. Like, because he might be hurt as well from all those comments.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be reevaluated today, Thursday, so we'll see what happens. There were reports that he might miss longer than the 6-week timetable. That was like the long end of when he was expected to return, which would be coming up kind of soon. But the reason I ask is because, you know, the Lakers are 5-9 without him. They're allowing 115.4 points per 100 possessions, the fourth worst mark in the league over that span, second worst net rating over that span. But I did want to nip one narrative in the bud before we move to the Celtics. I saw at least a couple Lakers fans on Twitter saying, like, well, look at their record without Lonzo. That must mean Lonzo is equally as impactful as LeBron. No.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a take.
Well, I just, it's amazing. I still think there are just some Lakers fans, and these people might just be from Kobe stan, and they're just looking to detract LeBron however they can. But just no.
Well, I think it goes, you know, beyond that, and I don't think it's just Lakers fans or Celtics fans. Like, I think fan base is just they have this tendency to put young players on a pedestal immediately, and with this very innate hope of this particular, you know, kid becoming the next super duper, you know, world beater, fantastic player of all time, whatever. Like last season, Bill Simmons in Jason Tatum's rookie season was like, oh, he could go down potentially as the best Celtic of all time.
Right.
Like, don't.
The other day in one of his episodes, he said he still wouldn't trade Tatum for Anthony Davis.
Yeah, but that's just dumb.
Right.
I mean, and that's sorry, that's the thing with Lonzo as well. I mean, a lot of Lakers fans are so invested in Lonzo, and this hope of him becoming a superstar kind of overshadows the realistic observation of him, which is unfortunate. Like, I don't have any doubt that he's going to be a positive NBA player, especially defensively.
Mm-hmm.
But like, let's not go nuts and like write it in stone that he's a future All Star or All NBA player. Like, he's what, 21?
Yeah, I think
21. Yeah, let's give him a few years. Yeah. Let's see what he becomes.
Well, since we brought up the Celtics, that's a good place to switch over to them. Because
that's why I did it, Brian.
They are having their own crisis of confidence. They have lost 4 straight. 3 of those games came against Milwaukee, Toronto, and Portland. No shame there. Even the Toronto game was not all that competitive, so that wasn't great. They also lost to your Chicago Bulls, Mort. And I think that's where the death spiral really started. Because then they were like, oh boy, we thought we were feeling ourselves coming into the All-Star break. We beat Philly. We beat Detroit. We thought we won 7 of our last 9, and they lose their first 4 coming out. I mean, the comments coming from that locker room, you know, Marcus Morris earlier this month said, you know, it's the attitude that we're playing with. Guys are just hanging their head. It's not fun. We're not competing at a high level. Even when we're winning, it's still not fun. I don't see the joy in the game. And Marcus Smart on Tuesday says they're just not playing together. And he says, you know, we're talking and linking up, but we're just going through something and we're going to need to continue to work at it and figure it out. So I'm going to pose the same question to you. Like, the Celtics are going to make the playoffs. Okay. Like, that's not.
Yeah, obviously.
You know, they are 8.5 games ahead of the Charlotte Hornets right now.
Right.
The question for them, you know, they're 2.5 games behind Philly for the 4 seed. They're 3 games behind Indiana for the 3 seed. They have 20 games left. So it's the same question of, do they have enough time to figure out what's been plaguing them all season? And do you think they're locked into that 5 seed, or do you think they could still move up a little bit?
What can the team learn in their final 20 games that they haven't already learned in 60 games?
I mean,
that's what it comes down to me, at least.
Yeah. I guess you can, you know, Kyrie after last night's game was basically just saying, like, I'm just excited to get to the playoffs so we don't have to think about, like, what can we learn about ourselves this season. We could kind of just go out and play and, like, really hone in on a matchup. Like,
oh, I get that.
Yeah. To me, the Celtics, I'm still not jumping ship completely from them. Like, I do think they're more likely than not going to be the 5 seed, although I still think Indiana could slip. I know it's disrespectful to Indiana, but, like, look at that. Look at their schedule in March, and then come back to me. You know, like, they have a brutal stretch coming up. So it wouldn't totally shock me if Boston could at least move up to the 4. But I still... Look, Milwaukee and Toronto going into the Eastern Conference semifinals should be favored whoever they end up facing. But it wouldn't shock me if Boston beat either one of those teams.
And I agree with that as well. Yeah. I mean, look, Boston is supremely talented.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've touched upon this so many times before. They're so deep. It's just a matter of them finding and maintaining a pecking order that makes sense. And enjoying the game, honestly, because I think so many of those guys have hit it right on the head. Like, we're not enjoying ourselves. It's very clear that we're out there. It's just, it's not fun. And you can sense it. Like, they're just, they're not engaged. I will actually defend them a little bit, because a lot of C's fans got really pissed after the Bulls game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did we lose to this team? I get it. But here's the thing. Chicago actually hit it. Damn near everything in that game. Yeah. That was what I mean. Both Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen had career highs.
Right.
Like, they just had they had like three or four stretches where everything they just like put up went in.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was an outlier.
Yeah.
That was obviously an outlier, and I think that was the wrong game to use, like, to get pissed.
Right.
Because that was just Chicago doing something that they really haven't done a whole lot of this year. Like, just basically hitting on all cylinders at the same time.
And
so let's just ignore that.
And the Bulls have been playing much better as of late. Like, we've entered the part of the season where, especially for these really bad teams, you have to kind of look past their record and just look at how they've been playing lately. Like, the Suns still suck eggs, but the Bulls have been playing better. The Hawks have been playing better. The Cavs are showing a pulse. The Knicks are showing a pulse. Like, these aren't... you should win a lot of those games, but it's not a total embarrassment if you lose to those teams.
Right. And I think that was just very unfortunate for the Celtics. I think they came into the United Center thinking, this is one we need.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that is going to put us back on track. And then they lost that, and they kind of came out of it a little bit shell-shocked.
Yeah.
And that was just what really drove them into this furthering loss. So... I think Boston overall, they just need to get, again, a pecking order, really, because everything seemed to work out so great last year when they were one game from the finals, because everyone knew who the primary guys were.
Right.
It still seems like there's a bit of confusion, like, oh, okay, we have two guys coming off screens. Who should we get it to? Who should we feed? Who should we, just figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, because then if you don't pass it to Kyrie, he will yell at you. There's that, too.
That is also true.
Yeah.
Maybe, honestly, I thought about this the other day. Maybe this is about Kyrie actually just upping his own usage rate, like, significantly, and saying, okay, instead of having, like, you know, seven guys who can't really figure out, like, a pecking order, then I can at least go, well, I'm the clear number one guy. Everyone else, like... you're down on tier 3 or 4. Doesn't matter. Now I'm going to be the guy who consistently takes 25 shots a game.
Well, I feel like he's kind of trying to do that, and I think that's kind of what's pissing off the young guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I don't agree that he's done that to the same extent. I think he did in the Bulls game.
Yeah.
And I think he was highly efficient, and they were in the game because of that. But I'm talking about, like, taking a James Harden approach.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah, like, I was going to say, I feel like he's asserted himself as the alpha this year, but you're right, it's not.
Yeah.
He's not taking 25 shots a game.
That's my point. Like, just basically prove a point. Instead of going to the... And it's also, I think when you go to the media and complain about your teammates and, you know, young guys or whatever, even though, to be fair, there is, like, a question out there whether or not his comments toward the young guys were actually misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, who knows? It's Kyrie. I don't know what he's thinking, right?
Right.
But when you actually make a change on the court, I think that could have a lasting effect.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they're a playoff team that are looking towards the playoffs, And you know what? In the playoffs, you go to your best player more than you don't. Yeah. So just getting that under his wings and just going, you know what? I have 20 games to be accustomed to taking 25 shots a game.
Yeah.
I think that's the way forward. And then everyone else, even if they're pissed, even if the kids are pissed, shut up.
Yeah.
Follow Kyrie. Like, we know Al Horford doesn't have a problem with Kyrie taking shots.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think you're right. Establishing a firm pecking order would go a long way toward solving a lot of what's plaguing them all year, and getting the kids on board with that is. And, like, I think that, I mean, Danny Ainge can't go up to the kids and say this, but what they should realize is we're all getting traded for Anthony Davis in 4 months. This is our last best shot to win a title. Like, we're not going to go to New Orleans and be in the playoffs next year or go and, like, be a legitimate title contender next year. This is our best chance to win a ring, probably for the next couple of years. You think Terry Rozier, yes, wherever he's going, is going to win a ring next year? Like, Phoenix ain't winning a ring.
No. So, I'm glad you brought up Rozier. He's bad.
Yeah.
He's become, I mean, remember all the expectations from us included going into this year with Rozier?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's been horrible compared to what everyone expected of him this year.
Yeah, Scary Terry took on a bad second meeting this year.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, how many millions of dollars did he cost himself this season?
Someone will pay him still.
To the same amount, I saw a lot of, hey, max.
Oh, yeah. Offer. Well, that was dumb already. Like, no one was going to max him. But, yeah, you're right. He's probably not getting 20-plus million a year. He'll probably get closer to low eight figures. But someone will still. It only takes one team.
You're right. But I'm looking, not just looking at the numbers, but his shot selection over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
It's horrid. Like, right. He plays completely outside of the offense.
Some team will talk themselves into seeing what he did last year and just say, like, he just wants to be a starting point guard. He doesn't operate well as a backup. We'll give him that opportunity. The problem for him, as you know, as is the case with a lot of these point guards, is most teams are set at that position. I mean, there will be some player movement this summer. Milwaukee with Eric Bledsoe, Indiana with, like, their entire roster. Utah could lose Ricky Rubio. Some of those guys will move. Some team will. There will be a point guard shuffle at some point, but a lot of teams are set at that position, so that will complicate his free agency. But I agree. He is definitely one of the biggest X factors for this Celtics team. Like, if he can play within himself, that will change everything. I mean, Aaron Baines has missed a lot of time. I think when he comes back, yeah, they're just a much better team. Horford, I feel like, is just still.
Did you just compliment Aaron Baines?
I mean, I hate him. And he terrifies me. But yeah, he's like, he makes a big impact on that Celtics team. So
I mean, I agree. I like Aaron Baines. I was very surprised you when we were not recording. You were basically constantly talking to me about your dread about meeting Aaron Baines in a dark alley somewhere.
Yeah, because if and when the Celtics and Sixers play in the first round, I am already dreading. He's hit 16 threes this season. He will match that total in a Sixers-Celtics series. And it will piss me off, every single one of them, with increasing anger every time.
So my final note on Boston before we move on to Phoenix.
Yes.
You know, this is one of those teams where I could also see just the switch from going to the regular season to the playoffs. Oh, you were going there as well?
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah. Basically, just, yeah, having this ability to close the book on the regular season and opening a new one that has yet to be written and is just completely fresh and new, I think that this is one of those teams that could actually go into that mindset and adapt to that and go, okay, everything that just happened over the last 82 games, that's over with. That's forgotten. It's done. We never discuss it again. Like, let's have a team meeting. Let's just all agree that bygones be bygones. This is a completely new season. Let's go for it.
Yeah, I agree. I totally, totally agree. Like, it would not at all surprise me to see this team in the Eastern Conference Finals, even after everything they've been through this year.
Right.
Like, they have the talent. It's just, can they put it together in time?
And that's the big question, because, I mean, Brad Stevens, as great as he is, you know, he will have to manage not only a bunch of egos,
mm-hmm.
but he's also going up against Giannis, Kawhi,
right.
Marc Gasol.
Right.
That in itself takes a lot of preparation time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you mean all the people who said, who would you take, Brad Stevens or any player in the NBA? Those takes didn't age well? I'm shocked.
Oh, God. Yeah, I remember that.
Terrible. All right.
Why are we on Twitter?
I don't know. I ask that question every day. Although, I guess one of the reasons is because I would not have even seen this Sun story if not for being on Twitter. And yeah. I feel like it's slipped under the radar somewhat because it's the Sun, so who really cares? But we need to talk about this because Woj had a report the other day. And, it is just so damning to speak not only... I mean, the Suns are terrible this year. Mm-hmm. That's no surprise. They've won 12 games. But the organizational dysfunction, the extent of it, does not speak to Phoenix's chance of digging out quickly. So I'm going to read some Woj quotes that we can talk about. He said, "This is an organization that's in a spiral in almost every way. It's a concern for the NBA. Robert Sarver has seemed to not learn a lot of lessons through years about his management style, his hands-on nature, and his ability to put an infrastructure in place and allow it to build an organization. You know, James Jones is an interim general manager. He has no front office experience. Woj says Jones has had a rather unorthodox view towards the NBA draft. There is not a lot of scouting going on in Phoenix. He's not on the road a lot. Sarver considered hiring a president of basketball operations, but he hasn't started interviewing candidates for that. There's no question for the league office, teams around the league, there's a lot of raised eyebrows at Phoenix about how they're operating right now. This is another crossroads for Robert Sarver to figure out how to get this from really a state of disrepair back on the path to relevancy, perhaps even before they consider the idea of becoming contenders again."
Yeah. So all of that is pretty bad.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, it is. So again, we've talked about like ownership styles,
mm-hmm.
and how it takes, you know, approximately 3 seasons to get into being an owner.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Sarver never really got it.
Nope.
He never really got it. I mean, I don't know what his idea or vision is for this squad, but in order to win, we agree, like, for most owners, the goal is, you know, it's 2 things. One, it's being, you know, competitive and having something to show off to all your rich friends. Yep. Like, let's be honest, that's one of them.
Right.
Secondarily, being profitable.
Yep.
Well, one of the ways you get profitable is by winning basketball games. Strangely, like, making the playoffs consistently. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but follow me. Like, a winning team actually has a chance of earning a lot of money. I know, it's a complete groundbreaking, but it's actually true. And when you do not have any organizational structure that's built towards achieving just one of those goals,
mm-hmm.
then at some point you will have to look yourself in the mirror and go, well, what are my priorities here? What am I doing with this team? Why am I an NBA owner?
Right.
If I don't want either of these things, or I don't know how to achieve them, then I need to do something else than what I've done in the X amount of years that I've owned this team.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm just completely puzzled by is we have a billionaire who's had major financial success in his own career,
mm-hmm.
and in different fields, and he cannot apply a business plan to an NBA team. And remember, the NBA is one of the most hottest leagues. Is actually the hottest league in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you fail in the NBA, you're absolutely horrible at your job.
Right. Like, if you're unprofitable, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is there any question Robert Sarver is horrible at his job?
No, but that's the thing. I'm just puzzled by it. Yeah. I'm puzzled by how you can be a successful businessman everywhere else, and then you come to this, a product that more or less sells itself.
Right.
And then you just flunk completely, like I did in physics.
Right. And you look at a guy like Steve Ballmer, who takes over a Clippers team that was a running joke for decades, and has now repositioned itself. We'll see what happens this summer. But either way, I mean, they've made so many smart moves since Ballmer took over. And I think, you know, to what you were saying, how are you a smart businessman and then screw something up this royally? I think it comes down to your willingness to defer and your willingness to admit that you are not an expert in this field. Like, maybe, you know, whatever you made your money in, like, Steve Ballmer is an expert in technology. But he knows he doesn't understand the salary cap as well as a basketball lifer. Or he knows, you know, so he has a Lawrence Frank in there. He brings in a Jerry West. He brings in guys who he trusts understand the game of basketball, understand the way the league works, both on the court and off. And he defers to those guys and trusts those guys. And then they bring those, you know, they come up with these ideas. They bring them the decisions to him. He has final sign off, but he's not meddling on a day-to-day basis. Whereas Sarver, entrusting, like, with all due respect to James Jones, entrusting a guy with no front office experience whatsoever and having no oversight above him, we saw that happen with Vlade a couple years ago in Sacramento. And Vlade made one of the worst trades in the past 5 years, giving up a completely unprotected pick and 2 pick swaps just to get out of, like, $20 million, which they then used on Rajon Rondo and other terrible players. So I think that's, you know, if you're a Phoenix fan and you're horrified by this report, I think the idea of them at least searching for a president of basketball operations should be encouraging. But then who takes that job? Like, Robert Sarver's reputation is known around the league to be terrible. Who's willingly signing up and being like, all right, yeah, I'll subject myself to this clown show?
So, someone who cares about the paycheck, honestly. But that's also problematic because if you only care about the paycheck, you're probably not going to be emotionally invested, and you need to be emotionally invested.
Right.
This is the greatest league in the world. I mean, in terms of basketball, everyone who are in front offices around the entire damn league are basically living their lives doing this. Like, you know, the running joke that if you're not a proper NBA exec, if you haven't gone through at least one divorce.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Like, exactly.
You know, I mean, it just takes so much sacrifice. So you need to find someone, like, you actually said it, a lifer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you need to find a lifer.
And they'll find someone, but as you said, it's just going to be someone who's out for the money. It won't be a top tier candidate who, frankly, you need at a time like this. Because, like, if you look at the talent on this Suns team, would you argue that the Cleveland Cavaliers have more talent than the Suns right now?
Oh, no. I mean, obviously, you know, no. The Cavs have very little talent. And we've touched upon, you know, Phoenix's roster as well. Like, they should be better.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, the Knicks are not better talent-wise than the Suns right now. But both of those teams have better records than the Suns. Like, it is, you know, people have long questioned whether Devin Booker is a winning basketball player because of his defensive impact. And, he could put up 25 points on a crappy team. Now we are getting to the point where they should be, like, this is his fourth season. I know he hasn't had much talent around him, but now he does, and they're still getting their brains beaten in most nights. Now it's, you know, they're 28th in the league in offensive rating, 29th in defensive rating. Like, this is just an objectively awful team, and it shouldn't be this bad.
I agree. And this is why they need to pilfer Steve Nash back, who is currently, I believe, a player development consultant for the Warriors.
Yeah, something.
Something along those lines. Title, all right. Yeah. Bring him in, not as GM, but as team president.
Ooh.
Because Robert Sarver respects Steve for obvious reasons. Sure. And as far as I understand the relationship, there is a mutual respect for one another.
Mm-hmm.
But here you have a guy in Nash who is insanely bright. Right. Like, let's just... insanely bright, not just in terms of basketball IQ, but he also serves like a general manager for the Canadian team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he understands how to build something up. And if he has this established respect from Robert Sarver immediately, Like, that's a hurdle he won't have to jump through and have to go through. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll immediately be able to do his job. And then, because he has that respect, if Sarver interferes, you know, Steve can go, hey, Bob, shh, be quiet and go sit right. in the corner. We're drafting right now.
Right, right.
And I get the whole prestige thing. Like, if I own an NBA team, obviously, I want to be in the room, in the war room on draft night. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I want to be in, you know, the offices around the trade deadline. Obviously, I want to go on the meetings, like on the free agency summits but free agency meetings, whatever. Obviously, I want to be a part of it, but I wouldn't be the dominating piece of it, because that could completely undermine the overall goal of getting the best players.
Right.
Like, and that's what he has to understand. Like, yeah, sure, you can be a part of it. Just shut up and stay in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And, like, look, they've made a lot of draft day mistakes in the past couple of years. I mean, their 2016 draft alone is going to set them back.
Yes.
A long way. You can't have that much draft pick value and piss it away like that.
Are you saying that Marquise, Chris, and Dragan Bender were not great acquisitions while you also gave up Bogdan Bogdanović? Are you really saying that, Brian?
Probably wasn't the best move, no.
Yeah.
They have made a couple decent to good moves this year. Like, signing Trevor Ariza to a one-year $15 million deal suggested they thought they could be a playoff team, which was dumb, but immediately realizing they were not a playoff team and flipping him for a young guy like Kelly Oubre makes sense. Now, waving Austin Rivers immediately did not, because Austin Rivers has been somewhat productive with the Rockets, and they needed a point guard at the time. But again, like, flipping Ryan Anderson for Tyler Johnson, at least you're addressing a positional need and not giving up anything that was providing major on-court value for you. So they have made some, acquiring Rashawn Holmes for nothing. I think they paid cash for him. That was great. Like, they have a lot of good young talent. The problem for Phoenix is right now is kind of the time where you should be in talent acquisition mode. I mean, they have $61 million. Right. $61.7 million in guaranteed salary next year. That's not counting Tyler Johnson has a $19.2 million player option, which I'm assuming he's going to pick up, because who the hell is paying Tyler Johnson $19 million in the open market? But
probably the Knicks.
Yeah, after they... No, they're getting Kyrie. Strike out. If they don't, yeah. But, I mean, in 2020-2021 right now... This is going to change based on what they do this summer, but they only have $41.2 million on the books. But, you know, after that point, Josh Jackson comes up for an extension that summer. DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges come up for extensions the following summer. So when you have all of this rookie talent, you have 3 or 4 years where you can bring in vets and bring, you know, lock these guys into long-term contracts too. And then it comes time to pay the rookies. And then your cap space goes away. Like, Ayton,
right.
You know, at this point, it's so early in his trajectory, but you would assume as the number one overall pick, he's putting up pretty impressive numbers as a rookie. He looks like he will be in line for a max deal. Mikal Bridges and Josh Jackson are probably not going to get maxes or anywhere close to it, but retaining them will still cost $10-plus million each. So...
Basically describing the Hornets.
Yeah, right. Like, at a certain point, you need to bring in vets, but what vets are going to play for this team unless you just completely overpay them? So you have a more finite window than it might seem right away. I mean, like, in theory, you have so much cap space and the world is your oyster, but in reality, no one is going to come to this Suns team next year unless you overpay them. You're not landing a top-tier free agent because you just don't have an appealing pitch. Come play for our 12-50 team is not going to land a Chris Middleton or a Jimmy Butler or, you know, whoever. Like, I'm not even talking about the super top guys, because why the hell is... I mean, Kevin Durant's going to the Knicks, so I just... whatever. I guess I can't be too down on bad teams, but Phoenix doesn't have come play with... these star young guys. Like, if Booker and Ayton take a step forward next year and this team wins 30 games and looks more competitive, then in the summer of 2020, you might have a chance to get someone relatively interesting. But right now, I think the goal for the Suns for the next 12 months is put a front office in place that commands respect around the league.
Agreed.
And then get Robert Sarver, just put him on a boat to the Bahamas and tell him to check back in 5 years.
Yeah, and that's obviously, that's also like a challenge because, you know, he's the guy cutting the checks.
Right.
So I understand that that's an uncomfortable situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I have been in that situation over at a former website that shall not be named.
Yeah.
And having an owner of a property that does not really know what to do with it is very problematic. Here's what I basically would do if I came in and like, let's just go with the Steve Nash example again. Like if I'm Steve Nash and I came in, I would basically sit down with Robert Sarver and I would go, look, we have two guys that are untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
Booker and Aiden. Everyone else are not there yet or have, you know, contracts that aren't great for us moving forward.
Right.
Like let's use a year to just sort out who we need to keep and who we don't need to keep. Like because look at the roster right now. You have both TJ Warren and Kelly Oubre, and then you have, you know, Mikal Bridges and Josh Jackson. Like that's just so many wings that aren't going to get enough minutes to really be worth their coming contracts extensions.
Right.
Like it's just not going to make sense. I would move TJ because, you know, he's a player who is productive. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what you have in him. He's obviously improved greatly as a shooter as well. Like, you can play him at the three and the four, so he's versatile. I don't even know if I would keep Kelly Oubre. If someone offers him a major offer sheet, I mean, they make the decision for me.
Right.
And if he comes cheap, I would. But I'm not in love with it either.
Yeah.
And if someone offers like Josh Jackson a huge deal in a couple of years, and
bye.
He's not great. Yeah, bye, right? Exactly. Like, I would like to hang on to like the cheap assets of DeAnthony Melton and Elio Gobo.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also because I think they're going to be tremendous assets down the line.
But they're also not going to be cheap for super long. Like, Melton's only inked through next year, and then he's a restricted free agent in 2020.
Yeah. And that's the problem. I mean, unless they don't take that step forward, right?
Right.
And then you have to wonder, do we even want them if they're not, you know, improving dramatically?
Yeah.
It's just, they need to take a year or two and just not think about, you know, wins and progress necessarily.
Yes.
Progress, of course, in terms of player development, but just identification more so than progress.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, like they have a lot more talent than most rebuilding teams do. There is a path out of this much quicker than there is for, say, the Cavaliers. But they have to know where they are. And they have to understand their situation. They have to know there is no... I mean, the only reason we bring in Trevor Ariza is to trade him later for a young player. But, like, why did we play him 34 minutes a game when we had him? That's dumb. We're not
to prove that he could still play. We, even though he was a known commodity, they felt the need to play him to make sure that other teams knew, hey, he's playable.
Right. Like, you just need to accept. I think, this is in general for bad teams. If you accept you're bad and you realize that and you put a heavy emphasis on your young players, give them a lot of minutes, let them work through their mistakes, you're going to get through your rebuild faster. But if you continue to clog up your playing time distribution with veterans who don't factor into your long-term future, you look 5 years down the road and you're in the same spot. And you wonder why.
Yeah. I agree completely. This looks to me as, especially from a salary structure, that they could end up being, like I said, the Charlotte Hornets of the West.
Yeah.
Just because they may end up re-signing everyone to deals that we actually deem fair, but collectively, it would just look like a complete, you know, crap show, really.
And at least, I mean, in Ayton and Booker, they theoretically have two stars, so maybe they'll be like the Timberwolves instead of, because Kemba's just alone. At least.
Wait, who's the second star on the Timberwolves, though?
According to his salary, Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, well.
Yep. Yep. It wouldn't be an episode of our podcast if Andrew Wiggins didn't get slandered at some point.
Sorry, Josh.
On that note, let's actually switch over and talk. We've been too negative this episode, so we want to end on a positive note. And look, we know we're just not going to spend a lot of time discussing the Knicks and the Cavs, and like that's probably the longest segment we're going to have on the Suns until the draft lottery. But we did want to give some props to good players on bad teams who have been showing out as of late. And that is your cue, Mort, because I know there is one Chicago Bull in particular who has caught your eye.
Look, I mean, he's caught everyone's eye.
Yeah.
Lauri Markkanen has been outstanding. So here's a little bit of a background. When he was drafted back in 2017... you know, most kind of set his ceiling as an 18-8 type of guy.
Right.
Like in his prime.
Right.
Because people really underestimated, myself included, the explosiveness he had in his dribble drive game. Mm-hmm. Because at Arizona, he was not, he didn't have the same freedom that he has in Chicago. Like now, at the age of 21, in his second season, he's averaging 19.5 points and 9 boards. And has more or less just completely owned February, really.
Yeah.
He's averaged over his past 13 games, 24 points, 13 rebounds, getting to the line over 6 times a game, hitting 91% of them. Like, there's a legit chance that he finishes out this season averaging 20 and 10, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, an arbitrary line. I don't put a lot of stock into it. Because it's just like numbers that are round. It doesn't really matter, but it does present a significant move up statistically from him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really loving what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a guy right now who's taking the ball off the backboard and pushing it in transition.
Yeah.
Finishing himself as well.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. I mean, a lot of guys were looking at him as a complimentary piece, and now he's actually setting up a question that is, could he be the centerpiece of a franchise?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw him run a 5-1 pick and roll the other day.
Correct.
So that was... Is Jim Boylan actually just letting the Bulls play now?
He is. I think he is. And I mean, he deserves credit for that because what he did before was just not positive at all.
Right.
And I also very much enjoy how so many Boylan stands were like right now are like, oh, look, you know, he's a good coach after all. Yeah, he's a good coach because he's changed.
Right.
He's,
right.
you kept talking about him when he was bad. Like, oh, he was a good coach. No, he wasn't when he forced the ball into Robin Lopez 25 possessions a game.
Yeah.
Now he actually opened it up. But going back to Markkanen for a second, he came into this season injured with the right elbow, I believe it
right.
was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his shooting arm.
Yep.
And I had seen him play last summer, summer 2018, for Finland.
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking so explosive. I saw all the games during the summer, and he was owning everyone. Like, he was dunking on people basically like 4 or 5 times a game, drilling threes, not hesitating, putting the ball on the floor. Finland even used him as a passing hub, mm-hmm. like from the high post. And he would make ridiculously difficult passes for someone 7 feet. And then he came, you know, back to the States and he hurt his elbow and people were like, well, we don't really know what he is. And I was like, you know, this kid is going to be good. This kid is going to be really good. I saw all these games in Finland. And then he came back, struggled initially. And then a lot of people were like, oh, well, maybe we should make him available in trade before, you know, the jig is up. Like, before people realize that he may not be have, you know, he may not have this high ceiling.
Right.
Look at him now.
Yeah.
I fully expect him to make the All-Star game next year.
Wow. I guess it's the team success thing may work against him, but the Bulls have won 4 of their past 5, so maybe they'll be genuinely somewhat competitive next year.
I think they will be because of the Otto Porter acquisition.
Yeah.
Porter has been tremendous because he streamlined the roles of everyone.
Right.
Beforehand, you didn't have this legitimate 3-man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone were kind of switching over positions, and like, nobody really knew what they were doing.
Wait, Jabari Parker's not a 3?
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
And Bobby Portis. Yeah, I know. And Bobby Portis isn't a full-time center lockdown defender. Who knew? But yeah, I mean, everything's just more streamlined. More shots are available. Everything just seems to flow. The one guy who's on the outs is Chris Dunn.
Yeah.
Because he's just been horrible. He cannot seem to find his offense. And honestly, I have a theory. I don't think he's a point guard. I think he's one of those guys who should be played. You know, understand my meaning here. He should be played much like Dwayne Wade. Like as a two guard who moves a little bit off the ball, but slashes and cuts off the ball.
Right. Yeah.
And should be viewed more as a slashing scorer instead of a guy who just tries to dominate the ball as a dribbler.
Yeah.
I don't think that's his game. I want to see him unleashed as a two, but I don't think that's going to happen in Chicago because Zach LaVine has actually been good recently.
Right.
But yeah, strangely enough, that's happened alongside the evolution of Markkanen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Bulls, do you think they've gotten too good as of late?
I love this question because they are not.
Yeah, I set you up.
Yeah, because the Atlanta Hawks, who we're gonna talk about right now, have been amazing.
Right.
And because Atlanta have been playing so well, the lottery odds have really not changed for Chicago.
Yeah.
Because Atlanta is just that tiny bit better, and they're the next in line. And Trae Young has just been, he's the next guy we're going to talk about, just outstanding. What was the last line I saw over, I don't remember, I saw it on Twitter. He was averaging something crazy, like 23 points, 8 assists, shooting the hell out of the basketball over the past like 13 games or something like that. I'm not sure the correct number, but like we thought that he would come in slow this year.
Well, he kind of did. I mean, he struggled with his efficiency at least early on.
Yeah, but we thought he would remain slow year long.
Right.
And that certainly hasn't been the case.
Yeah. No, I definitely set you up with the too good question because, I mean, the Hawks are still four games, or the Bulls are still four games up on the Hawks in terms of the fourth worst record. And, like, yeah, they're too good. They're not going to catch up to New York or Cleveland, but they never were going to.
And they're right, like, exactly.
And it doesn't make that much of a difference anymore. Like, this is where the new lottery odds are, will at least help with, like, the egregious tanking. Because under the old system, Chicago would have been incentivized to tank more than they are right now. But
right
now, I mean, assuming they finish as the four, which seems likely because they're four games up on Atlanta. They're 2.5 back from Cleveland. Like, that seems like a big buffer zone either way. They're going to have a 12.5% chance of the number one overall pick, 48.1% chance of top four. The top three teams are only 14% for the number one, 52.1% for the top four. So it's really not a huge difference. I mean, the difference is their floor more than their ceiling. So they can slip, you know, all the way to eight, which is not ideal. But
correct.
But, I mean, in terms of, like, the odds of them getting a top, or Zion or just a top four pick, whether it's RJ Barrett, John Morant, whoever, it really doesn't make that much of a difference.
Could you imagine John Morant on the Bulls?
I was going to say, like, that might be my favorite draft day. I guess, like, figuring out where Zion is going to go is the most important one because I don't want him to go to, like, Cleveland or Phoenix. I don't want to inflict that. Like, I think him in Dallas or him in Memphis would be my two favorite. But
I'm all in on the Dallas thing.
Yeah,
I want him in Dallas. I think that could be so fun.
But yeah, Ja and Chicago might be my favorite non-Zion prospect team fit.
Right, because they would actually have a set starting lineup as well. I know that starting lineups should be more fluid, but it's the NBA. They're just not in that sense.
Right.
You would have Wendell Carter in the five, Laurie Markkanen playing the power forward position, Otto Porter at the three, LaVine at the two, and Morant running the point. I mean, that's a streamlined lineup.
And then Chris Dunn off the bench in that six-man role.
He's probably going to get moved, I think.
Yeah.
I think so.
It would make sense.
Yeah. I'm not sure who takes him. I don't think he has tremendous trade value.
Right.
But another point guard, though, just going back to Trae Young, because I dug up the stats. Over his past 15 games, Brian.
Yep.
23.9 points, 9 assists. He's hitting 43% from downtown on 7.3 attempts, hitting 84.5% from the line, 6.5 attempts, mm-hmm. and he's doing it in 33 minutes.
Whew. Yeah. I mean, that's what surprised me the most, is instead of hitting the rookie wall, which it seemed like he did a little bit earlier in the season, he just broke right through it. And it, you could tell he's becoming more comfortable. The game is starting to slow down for him. Some of his moves are just so damn crafty. Like, he's really got that step back three down already. I mean, that was one of the big concerns about him coming in, right? Was, can he get his shot off against bigger NBA guards? The answer is yes. He just has the nastiest step back three outside of James Harden.
Right, and he's also got patience.
Mm-hmm.
That's what took me by surprise. I thought he would come in, and because of his size, he would like fling up shots too quickly.
Right.
Because he would see someone like 6'4 with a 6'10 wingspan just jump at him.
Right.
But like, he keeps his cool all the time.
Yeah.
Like, just, yeah, I mean, fair enough. He averages almost four turnovers a game. But a lot of them aren't necessarily desperation turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some are, but he's 20.
Yeah.
I was expecting more of those.
Right.
But he keeps his head down. And then he finds his way to, like, get past that defender, reach the play, and then you have, like, John Collins, you know, jumping in from the weak side. Oh, there's a nice little alley-oop pass. Or there's a floater for Trey because he understands he has a step on his defender. Like, everything is so calculated.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love where he's going with his game.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about the Suns having too much talent. They should be better, and... like, the Hawks' rebuild is off to a great start so far.
It is.
Like, their past two draft classes have been fantastic. Between him, John Collins, Kevin Huerter. Like, they have a good young core in place. Like, Collins and Young look like foundational pieces.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm going to go back on what I said about Kevin Huerter. I wasn't a fan coming in. I did not like the draft for Atlanta. I thought there were better players on the draft board basically every time they selected a pick.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel of that a little bit, but at least Huerter has proven himself very much capable.
Yeah.
Coming in and just draining a ton of shots, seems to move well without the basketball. There are certainly elements of his game that I need to see be expanded significantly, in particular, like his playmaking and his ability to get to the free throw line, because you cannot be a starting shooting guard in this league and take 0.8 free throws a game.
Right.
That is just a tremendous problem. Mm-hmm. But you're right. They are building a foundation that has, you know, a philosophy, unlike what Phoenix is doing.
Right.
Like, everyone needs to be able to shoot the basketball.
Yeah.
And we saw the Omari Spellman pick as well. Like, Omari is averaging almost three threes a game, you know, attempts.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone on this team are just jacking up threes. And it doesn't really matter if it goes in or not because this is a development season.
Right.
I think they took a page out of Brooklyn's book and just went crazy with the long-range shots.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of will from henceforth just identify who are the guys that we will build around.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I remember even coming into, after the draft, there was the joke of, like, they're just trying to build, like, a poor man's Stephen Clay, like a poor man's Golden State backcourt with Trey and Huerter, and everyone's like, okay, that's great, but good luck. They're not Stephen Clay. They're still not Stephen Clay, because Stephen Clay is the best shooting backcourt of all time, but you can see they are trying to emulate that strategy, and I think you're right about the Brooklyn thing. And Brooklyn, I mean... they had this offense in place for a couple of years, and the same was true with Philly, like, early in their rebuild. Putting your system in place and using that to suss out who's a keeper, who's not, makes sense. Like, these teams just don't have the talent. I mean, like, Atlanta this year and Philly a couple of years ago, Brooklyn a couple of years ago, they didn't have the talent to be successful, but their philosophy, their system was smart. And now you're going to see, over the coming years, Atlanta is going to take some major step forward because they have been running this system the whole time. They're just going to continue adding talent around their young guys.
Yeah. Agreed. And that is part of why they're so intriguing moving forward. If they get a legit center at some point, and by center, I mean, you know, a new age unicorn type center.
Right.
a guy who can step out and hit threes while still being a rim protector and a shot blocker and a rebounder. Like, if they get a dominant big man to round this thing out, and that would allow John Collins to slide down to the four where he can be a little bit more stretchy, but he can then play five, you know, backup minutes at the five as well.
Yeah.
I think this team's, like, structure would just be amazing because you have Taurean Prince at the three, obviously Trey at the one, Collins at the four, Herder, I suppose, at the two. I dig that. Yeah. I really dig that. I mean, you can even see it kind of like in the outline of Dwayne Dedmon, who can shoot the ball,
right,
who is a rebounder and a shot blocker. He's just not as dynamic as, you know, a Karl Anthony Towns or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're right there. Yeah. In 5 years' time, I'm scared. You know, I can't say that word anymore, but I'm scared something less of them. Yeah.
I don't even think it takes 5 years. I think they're right on path, man. They're
yeah.
Kudos to the Hawks for knowing how to rebuild correctly. As you said, a perfect contrast to the Phoenix Suns.
Right. And also, by the way, we need to give this guy a shout out. He's not young. He's the exact opposite. But Vince Carter, man.
Yeah. I mean,
look, this is a guy who I think NBA teams should pay a ton of money for in the offseason, or just offer a lot of money. Like, there should be a bidding war every summer for Vince Carter until he's like 55. It doesn't matter. Just get him on the roster, because he seems to have this tremendously positive effect on young guys. Yeah. Like, he takes them under his wing. He's very polite. He's very professional. They look up to him. He's still, you know, a physical marble that in practice like commands respect. And that athleticism, that's not going anywhere, Brian. I don't care. That's not going
anywhere. He almost tried to, like, end Karl Anthony Towns' life.
I saw it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that is... I don't think we can put into words how important he is for younger teams. I actually think him being a Sacramento King helped create the foundation of putting them in the position where they are today.
Interesting. I thought you were going to go a different direction and say, like, the league should hire him, and then he just has a clinic every year for, like, these 30-somethings, like, former superstars who can't accept a diminished role. Like, the Carmelo Anthony should just hire Vince Carter just as his, like, personal liaison until...
Well, that too. Let's give Vince more jobs. More money for Vince.
Right.
I'm down.
Right. Like, Allen Iverson, you know, a decade ago, like, really needed Vince Carter right now. He really needed to humble yourself. Like, Vince Carter was a star. I mean, he was a 25-point-per-game scorer in his prime. And he's just so seamlessly accepted this dialed-back role, but he's still contributing to a winning culture, which... it's incredible. Like, if more former stars could make this transition so easily, it'd be amazing. But unfortunately, not everyone can. So yeah, good call. Definite shout out to Vince Carter there.
Also, just on the download, Vince has hit 82 threes this year. Yeah. He's 42.
Yeah, he's shooting shockingly well.
Oh, this dude.
Yeah.
I mean, he's older than me, but he makes me feel old
right,
in some way.
Right, yeah. One other guy I want to shout out is Mitchell Robinson of the Knicks.
Yeah.
So DeAndre Jordan's missed a couple games now. So Robinson has started to get some additional minutes. He's still coming off the bench, but he had 30 against the Spurs in a win that Spike Lee was very distraught about during the Oscars. And then... another win against the Magic two nights later. He has 11 blocks in his last two games.
He has 103 blocks on the season, and he's played just 45 games, and he's playing 18 minutes a night.
It's amazing.
He has a block percentage of 10.6.
So I looked up who was the last guy to have a line as a rookie. The last guy to have the line of 17 points, 14 rebounds, 6 blocks, and 3 steals, which is what he did against the Magic. The only two guys in history were David Robinson and Ralph Sampson.
I didn't see the Ralph Sampson come up, but I had a feeling it was David, because he was a steals monster.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't. Robinson is still very raw. I mean, he turns 21 in April, so there's no shame in that. Like, but he has something there, and we joke about, like, why would any star free agent join the Knicks? I don't think, like, Mitchell Robinson. They're looking at Mitchell Robinson. They're like, oh, well, now we're definitely going to join because they have Mitchell Robinson. But he is. I mean, there's something there. Like, he's a moldable block of clay at this point. But you can see the talent. I mean, if he hits on it, he's like Hassan Whiteside, but good.
No, you know what he is? He is this era's Tyson Chandler.
Ooh, okay.
But more athletic.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing with Tyson. Tyson, early on in his career, he went shot block hunting. And then he realized, oh, that's not going to help. That's not helping anyone. I need to actually play defense. Blocks doesn't mean jack. I mean, I need to play defense. And then his blocks went down, but his defensive impact just went up. I think Robinson right now, he's going to trail off in a couple years with the shot blocking.
Mm-hmm.
As he just becomes more refined in his understanding of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to be just as disruptive defensively, like grabbing a ton of boards, you know, finishing. You already see the high field goal percentage. Like, he doesn't take shots outside of his own rhythm,
right?
Much like Tyson and DeAndre Jordan, whatever. And he's going to be that type of dude.
Yeah.
Just a lanky, long, athletic, very quick-footed dude who can cover so much ground.
Yeah, he has taken one shot more than 10 feet from the basket. He is Ben Simmons, basically.
He's, oh my god, his shot distance is 1.6 feet.
It's amazing. But yeah, I just looked at this, though. He's on the Hinkie special contract. He's locked in next year, not guaranteed in 2020, 2021, and then team option in 2021, 2022. So they have him super cheap for the next 3 years. Like, that is a somewhat appealing pitch to free agents, I think. Again, it's not like the difference maker.
Right.
But it's, hey, we have this guy who could be, I don't know if you're going to start him next year or not. If you bring in Kevin Durant and Kyrie, you're probably looking for a veteran option. But, like, this guy could be a major factor defensively. And we have him so cheap. Like, you're not going to run into the problem we did with these other big threes where, you know, we lose our supported cast because everyone else gets too expensive. Like, Mitchell Robinson is here through 2021, 2022 at less than $2 million a year.
But before we go all that way, let's just inform Knicks fans that in no way, shape, or form are they going to, you know, end up paying just $1.8 million for him in 2021, 2022, because that's the Nikola Jokic example again. If they pick up that option, he's going to be unrestricted afterwards because he's a second round pick.
Yeah. Fair point.
So after 2021, he's going to get paid.
Yeah, one would hope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, given the current trajectory.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then the last guy who it feels wrong to include him here because he's not on a terrible team, but the team has been terrible for so long that We
it counts.
Yeah. So Marvin Bagley suffered a knee injury last night. We don't know the severity of it. We are hoping it is not as bad as it looked, but he banged his right knee and grabbed his left knee after his left knee bent in a way it should not have. So I am at least mildly concerned that we have seen the last of Marvin Bagley that we will this season. Now, you and I have said, look, Luka Doncic is the best rookie in this class. He should have been the number one overall pick. Like, Ayton and Bagley in particular are going to have that, and Trae Young even, are going to have that stigma attached to them. But all three have been playing well, and Bagley, I mean, I think Bagley, if this is the last we saw of Marvin Bagley, we need to acknowledge what he's been doing, especially over the past month or so. Like, over his past 13 games, he averaged almost 18 points, 9.5 rebounds, 1.3 blocks, hit a couple threes. I mean, he was playing impactful basketball off the bench for a Kings team that, again, no one in their right mind thought the Sacramento Kings were going to be this close in the playoff race at the end of February.
Right. I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I saw someone post it on Twitter, I thought it was interesting.
Okay.
Marvin Bagley or DeAndre Ayton?
Ooh. Well, let's find out how bad Bagley's knee injury is.
Let's ignore the knee injury.
Yeah. Hmm.
Because the numbers, when you, you know, adjust it for minutes,
mm-hmm.
stack up very evenly. Very evenly.
Yeah, I guess, and it's a matter of how much do you worry about Ayton's defensive issues? Like, I feel like you could hide Bagley because he doesn't play center, whereas Ayton, if you don't have a legit rim protector at the five and you don't have a guy who can guard stretch fives or defend pick and rolls well, that is more mm-hmm. of a defensive liability than a four who can't do that.
I think I'm with you. And there are two more components that intrigue me with Bagley that I'm kind of concerned about regarding Ayton.
Mm-hmm.
Bagley can get to the line yeah. a lot. Like, he has a free throw rate of 40.5. But he also takes threes. Like, fair enough, he's only hitting just like 26% or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got good form when he's shooting it. And yeah. the sample size is just so low, you can't really concisely say that he's a bad shooter or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, he projects as someone who can actually become a stretch player.
Mm-hmm.
So if he rounds out his game, and like you said, you can, yeah, well, not necessarily hide him, but, you know, he can be a system defender.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, then you can argue that he will have at least less holes in his game.
Right.
Than Ayton.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to, where does Ayton develop in terms of being this dynamic inside force? Is he going to just shack it all the way up?
Right. Yeah.
Like, what is he going to do? He's one of those guys who may be able to do that in a year or two.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that we can at least make that comparison, or we can at least bring it up with a straight face.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, Bagley was a guy coming into the draft where I just didn't see it as, like, why is this guy being mentioned ahead of Luka or Jaren Jackson Jr.? And, I mean, I still feel that way to some degree,
right.
but at least it's yeah. a lot closer than it was for me coming into the year. Like, I am... genuinely pleasantly surprised at how well he's been playing, especially as of late. I know his per game line, his season long per game line will not jump out as anything special, 14.7 rebounds, whatever, but he has been playing really well over the past month. I hope, knock on wood, I hope this knee injury is not something that will affect him long term, whatever it may be.
Agreed.
Because with Fox healed and him, like, the Kings, much like the Hawks, they suddenly have a really promising young core.
They do. I mean, we've talked at length about Sacramento.
Yeah.
And Bogdanovich as well. I mean, if they get a significant upgrade in free agency one of these years,
mm-hmm.
like, if Harrison Barnes ends up opting out.
Yeah.
And it frees up cap space for him. Like, maybe, if they play it smart, they get someone in there who can round out that roster.
Mm-hmm. Or if Harrison Barnes just starts playing better, which is always possible.
That is also a possibility,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Obviously, we hope that the knee injury is not severe.
Yeah.
And I think, just to echo you a little bit, it's not, you know, Marvin Bagley in isolation that we were critiquing back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It was the notion that he should somehow be number one,
right?
Because
right.
a lot of mock drafts, at least early on in last season, they had him as number one or number two,
yeah,
which was just, and yeah, that was just too high,
right?
And, you know, I understand that he ended up getting drafted at number two, but he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And that's just where it is. There are superior options on the table, and that's all that we're critiquing, you know.
Right.
Bagley himself, you know, he's absolutely fine, and the same goes with Ayton, but they do have holes in their games that someone like Luka and Trey may not have mm-hmm. in the same sense.
Yeah. I think the bottom line is, this draft class is absurd. Like, all of the top guys. Really, all of them. I mean, Bamba is hurt now, and he didn't just get much of an opportunity. But aside from that, every team should be happy with, like, every team in the top seven should be happy with who they picked.
Actually, I know why you said that, because you saw the name Colin Sexton, you were like,
yeah.
Can I just point something out about Colin Sexton?
Mm-hmm.
He's shooting 39 from deep, and he's hitting 85% of his free throws. I look at that as being somewhat important components moving forward, or at least strong indicators,
mm-hmm.
that if he can build off of those, he can become a very efficient scorer. I get that right now his true shooting percentage is 48,
right,
which is abysmal,
yeah.
but that is because he takes so many two-pointers and hits them at a very, very low rate.
Yeah.
If he just learns to just spot up from three, and he's got good rotation on the shot, like it's a quality shot, and he can get to the line a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
that's done. I mean, then he can be a very solid offensive player. The thing is, he really didn't get a fair shake in Cleveland. Like, when did that The Athletic article come out?
Oh, yeah, that yeah, just, yeah. Early in the year.
Very, very early, right? I don't even think he'd cracked, like, 20 games played yet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, where they were like, he's not a real point guard. And to your point about his shot selection, look at who he's playing alongside this year. Again, put him with more talent. Even since Kevin Love has come back, he's been playing a lot better.
Right. I mean, he's obviously a young guy, so he's going to feed off of superior talent.
Yeah.
I'm not out on Sexton at all. And if you go further down the list, like Kevin Knox got potential.
Yeah.
You and I both love Mikal Bridges. You know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander looks great. Yep. Miles Bridges as well.
Yep.
I mean, he's got one of the best shot selections I've seen from all the rookies. He's just not there efficiency-wise yet, but he takes the right shots.
Yep.
Jerome Robinson has come alive a little bit. You know, we don't really know what Michael Porter is going to be, but he could become significant. Same goes for Zaire Smith. Those are the two guys who haven't played yet.
Yep.
And now, by the way, Brian, just to round this out, Troy Brown is going to get minutes for the rest of the season in Washington, it's been said.
Oh, finally. Your golden yes, boy.
That's my golden boy. So over the next couple months, you're going to see what I've been talking about, right. Hopefully.
Well, everyone can look forward to that. I think that's a good place to wrap up. So, again, thank you to everyone for listening in today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, feel better. Drink some tea. Got it. Playoffs are yeah. coming, buddy.
Playoffs are coming. I'll stick to the 2 gallons of tea a day.
Good. Good strategy.
Yeah. Take care, man.
You too.